Welcome to the Delling Pod with me, James Dellingpole. And I know I always sound excited about this week's special guest, but I'm even more excited this week because I've got special guests, Martin and Marianne Gebauer, who I met through my Telegram channel. And I'm tempted to subtitle this podcast "The Ones That Got Away," or maybe "The Canadians Who Escaped, Who Made a Home Run from Colditz," because that's really what you've done, isn't it? You're both Canadian citizens who fled the tyranny. Tell me what's going on. I know you've been away a while, but what are you hearing from Canada?
Wow. I think terror, a lot of fear, and panic for a lot of people. I think a lot of Canadians are terrified of their government. They do not trust the government anymore. They realize that the Canadian government has been bought by the World Economic Forum, and even Trudeau, talks so glowingly about the World Economic Forum, and then Klaus Schwab brags that he kind of owns our government, that half of the people in power are World Economic Forum puppets. And I think the public in Canada is beginning to awake to this, but it's alarmingly slow.
Yeah.
I'd say it's the minority of people who are awake, and that's alarming as well, because then our fellow Canadians are not with us and in understanding the threat.
I think a big part of that is that the unvaccinated have been vilified by the government, by Trudeau, very clearly in the media, and even by neighbors and friends and everyone else. And their freedoms have been severely restricted. I mean, as Canadians, if we were in Canada, we could not get on a plane. We're not allowed to do that. So Marianne has a lot of conversations with people that are looking for options. How can they leave Canada, given that they're virtual prisoners at this stage? It's unbelievable, really.
Yeah.
And not only how can they get out, but how can they get their assets out?
Yeah.
This is a big conversation that people want to have about how do you secure your assets?
Yeah.
Because our government has shown that they are not, they're not to be trusted. They're freezing people's assets.
Well, we're gonna move on to that in a bit, because Marianne, you've got technical expertise. In fact, you may as well tell us. I know obviously what you do and who you are, but tell us about yourselves and your backgrounds.
Well, I studied physiology in university, so I actually did pre-med. So I always had a very keen interest in medicine, but then I ended up doing an MBA and ended up as an investment manager. And I was in that industry for quite a few years, then, you know, started a family and then started to do some consulting. And we were living kind of in various spots around the world, consulting internationally. And then I was kind of in cruise control and enjoying living in Oxford because my husband went back to school there. And then COVID began. And that's when the antenna went up. And I thought something is not right. And more recently now, I am advising people on their investments and how to move their assets out of the country.
Right.
So that has become something that I'm doing more recently.
Mm-hmm. And Martin, what about, tell us about yourself.
Well, I'm a wildlife biologist and environmental consultant. So I've had my consulting practice for over 30 years and practicing throughout Canada and a lot of work actually in the Northern Arctic in Canada. So I've been doing that for a long time. As Marianne mentioned, I went back to school about 5 years ago, went to Oxford, did a second master's in biodiversity, conservation and management, and then also started a PhD there. But I'm back to consulting. It's a long story, but with COVID and everything else, I'm back to full-time consulting for the time being.
Well, I must say, in most, if I were to meet most people from your line of business, I probably wouldn't get on with them, because I suspect that a lot of people in the kind of sustainability, etc. industry are basically parasites on from we know that that Big Green is a massive scam, and it takes money from the consumer and puts it in the pockets of vested interests, and it's got nothing to do with saving the environment. I know. One of the things I like about you is you are actually old school. You actually are interested in things like I am, like bird watching and genuine conservation, really practical schemes that look after nature, but don't kind of, that aren't predicated on the idea that man is evil and that everything we do needs to be constrained, which is great. So we'll talk about that as well.
I think you've really nailed it. That's how I've always approached it. What I'm most interested in my consulting practice is finding that compromise between development, economic development, and retaining kind of those environmental and ecological values at a site. So in the Arctic, for example, it would be protecting caribou herds and making sure that they can sustain their numbers and that. I work on gold mines, uranium mines. I'm working on a container terminal right now. So it's really finding that balance between environmental protection and economic development. And that's a challenge sometimes.
Well, yeah. And the world you describe there is predicated on there being a functioning global economy. I mean, how much longer do you think that's going to last?
You know, that's a very good question. But certainly, like, for example, the container terminal, there's every indication that this whole trade across the oceans and that's going to decline. And yet there's at least two projects in Vancouver that are pushing ahead with their, with their development, and also looking at projections of container traffic and everything else. And it's all increasing 10, 20% over the next 10 years. So I'm not quite sure where those projections come from, but I suspect that all of these projects are going to have to be reined in very quickly. When things really, really change.
This is what I'm thinking. I mean, we've got lots of, in the UK, I don't know how aware you are, we've got lots of white elephant projects. I mean, completely pointless schemes. One of them, which is HS2, this railway, which nobody wants apart from companies like Siemens, which are going to make like bandits from it. And people like Boris Johnson, who is a tool of the global elite. And it seems that he's been kind of railroaded into this decision by the powers that be. We've got wind turbines going up, even though we've got an energy, a burgeoning energy crisis, which we know, again, has been orchestrated by the same people who are now saying, oh, we must do something about it. Well, they should have thought about that 20 or 30 years ago when they first started running down fossil fuels. So I think we're all in agreement, aren't we, that we're heading for an epic global economic financial system meltdown. But before we go into the details, Marianne, about how people can save their sorry asses before it's too late, tell me about your, because you've been living out of suitcases, haven't you, since you started. When were you last in Canada?
Well, We left Canada rather innocently September 2020 on our way to Oxford for 2 years. And our friends in Oxford started to warn us and say, listen, there's a lockdown that appears to be coming in the UK. Hold off. And we were vacationing on the island of Corfu, trying to avoid your British, it was one of the corridor countries that we could come from and avoid quarantine. So we never did make it into the UK because you went into a very draconian lockdown, which would have prohibited Martin from doing his research and his PhD. So we ended up in Corfu for 2 months until they went into a massive overnight lockdown. And there was like no COVID on the island at all. It was just insane. But I think the IMF must have paid a little visit to Greece and said, here's a lump sum of money, lock down your people. So here we were, ready to live in the UK for 2 years with all of our suitcases in tow. And we thought, now what? So we looked around Europe and thought, well, we've always admired what Sweden is doing. They're actually following pandemic protocol. So off to Sweden we went, and we spent 2 glorious months there over the Christmas season with the markets and the buzz of Christmas. It was magical because Sweden, for the most part, did not follow these draconian lockdown measures. They let their people continue to live and work and thrive. So it was magical being there. But after Christmas, in January, the days were short and cold. And we looked around the world and thought, well, where else can we go? And we thought, oh, we've always loved Costa Rica. We've been coming here for 20 years. So we thought, why go back to Canada? Let's go to Costa Rica. Meanwhile, friends and family in Canada were saying, well, you really should come home. You better get home because it's rather selfish to be on the road. I mean, you're gallivanting around the world while the rest of us are taking this all very seriously. And we thought, why? I know misery likes company, but we're not interested in that type of company at this time. So we decided to stay in Costa Rica until Canada dropped its mandates of lockdown in June. And at that point in time, we decided to go back to Canada, but we made it more of a visit. We popped in to tidy up some affairs. But from the outside, objectively looking in on Canada, we were horrified by what our country was becoming.
We'd actually promised ourselves that we would leave by the end of August because we knew that what was coming down the pipe in mm-hmm. September, October. Mm-hmm. And we almost stuck to that. We left first week of September, and we were very glad we did, because if we'd left it much later, we would be stuck there really, or looking at other means which weren't as palatable.
Bizarrely.
So we left in the fall, traveled through Mexico, spent a couple of months sussing out the scene in Mexico for living on the East Coast and West Coast, and then came back to Costa Rica. And so we've really been out of the country for, since September 2020, essentially. But looking into our country, I think with a different set of lens, because we are from the outside, you can see the transition into essentially tyranny and totalitarianism and communism. It's hard to describe it, but and meanwhile, watching loved ones like frogs in boiling water.
Yeah.
And they don't seem to be waking up, which is the scariest part of all.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting part of this journey, is realizing how few people in Canada actually understand the narrative. And that there's almost no point in having a discussion with those people, because they can't switch their paradigm for whatever reason. But we have met amazing people that are of like mind. I mean, Marianne speaks to people every day. And so it's encouraging from that perspective that we're not, alone here, that people are reaching out looking for, some solutions or some ideas of how they can perhaps depart or manage their lives in Canada if they decide to stay.
So I imagine lots of people are going to be watching this, and they're going to be filled with envy, because it is one of the conversations that people of our mindset, our Welt Anschauung, have, isn't it? That where can we go in the world where we can live as we would like to live, where we don't get constrained by this biosecurity tyranny, where, I mean, Canada, as you say, has become like North Korea, which is something I never expected would happen in my lifetime. I thought Canada is a boring country. Sorry, with respect, Canada's quite a nice but boring country where really not much happens. It's not extreme like America. It's all going to be okay. Canada, a bit like New Zealand. I mean, do you remember how when we were younger, New Zealand was one of those countries where we would all flee to if shit got real. And we'd go to New Zealand because that's the final refuge. But no, New Zealand is another of those countries. And Australia, of course. Have you got any theories, by the way, on why that is?
Sorry, just one thing that I think is really sad and telling is that a lot of the people that we speak to are those people that came to Canada to escape tyranny from other countries. They have left Eastern Europe. So these are, like Romanian and Polish and all of these people. And they're the ones, for the most part, that are awake, because they have experienced authoritarianism and tyranny firsthand. Mm-hmm. The rest of the Canadians that have never seen a war, or have never seen any kind of
adversity,
they don't get it.
Yeah. I've noticed this, that people from former, from Eastern European countries, from people who are formerly, who grew up under communism, have much more, much better tuned antennae, I think, to what creeping tyranny looks like. And they're recognizing it now.
They recognize it. Because they know it, they've lived it. And when we were back in Vancouver this summer, we had a number of days that we put up booths at the beach, information booths on treatment for COVID, like, you know, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, or information for people who have vaccine injury. We were putting the post, you know, setting up these booths and met hundreds and hundreds of people. And that those people that we met this summer primarily were from Eastern European backgrounds. And they're terrified. And at this point now, they all want to get out. We still keep in touch on a regular basis, but it's a very unique situation that we're in. And I think why our biggest frustration is the sleepiness of family and friends, or the complicity of family and friends who are at high levels and who are complicit in the crime. It's hard to know whether or not they're aware.
I've got a whiny dog that wants to be let outside. Hang on, it's going to make too much noise otherwise. Hang on, give me a second. I like it when real life intrudes into the podcast. I think it's part of the kind of the homespun feel. Have you got any theories on why it is that so few people are waking up? You know, why what you call the paradigm, Martin, is why changing paradigm is such a problem for so many people?
I think it's multifaceted, and Maren, jump in here because I'm sure I'm going to miss that. I think part of it is that Canadians and a lot of these countries around the world Canadians are used to the government taking kind of care of them. They trust their government. They don't expect them to do anything that would not be in their best interest. And on top of that is the propaganda. So through the media, which the government in Canada completely controls, they are inundated with a message. Just one message, and it's also a fear message. You know, you need to do this, or it could be very dangerous for your health. You need to protect others around you. And people, when there's a thing, I can't think of it right now, but when people are afraid, you can get them to do pretty much anything. Mm-hmm. And I think that was rolled out very successfully in Canada and really Europe and across the world. Very few countries were not susceptible to that. Yeah. So I think that's a big part of it.
And I think one more factor is, like the BBC, in Canada we have the CBC, and it is government funded and it is managed by Trudeau and company. And so the whole narrative is being controlled. And this is a national broadcasting that most Canadians tune into, you know, at some point of their day or the week.
But the government didn't stop with the CBC. They funded over 1,000 media outlets at a tune of $800 million, you know, to fund these media outlets. And of course, it could even be more than that. Trudeau's even come out and bragged about this and said, well, we expect to get a good story out of these media outlets because we paid them off.
We own them.
Even joked about that. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. But I remember even as recently as 10 years ago that there were certain Canadian newspapers, or at least they had the National Post and the Financial Post, certainly both had columnists that I really liked, you know, sort of, I wouldn't call them contrarian necessarily, but they were sort of, they spoke about free markets, they spoke against they recognized the evils of the environmental movement, they saw through it. I mean, I know you've got people on the other side like David Suzuki, who is, you know, Satan, one of Satan's envoys, but you had some good Corcoran, Terence. It's been a while since I started quoting.
Terence Corcoran.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And somebody Solomon, I think, was very good. And you had some good commentators. Have they all been shut down? You know, Comrade Black, where's he in all this?
Well, you should mention a little bit about the Toronto Star. There are a couple of people there.
The Toronto Sun is not really. The mainstream has been bought, and the universities, the world of academia has been bought.
Yeah.
And Canada has welcomed, especially in Vancouver, has welcomed people from China. In fact, I'd say 70% of Vancouver is Asian. Well, you know. it's no accident, I think, that Canada has allowed the Asians to come in these numbers, because they know they're a very compliant, obedient culture. So that is a perfect type of person to have as immigrant to Canada, because you know that they're controllable. So I reflect back to our immigration policy, which has not been equitable. We would, when in our travels, we'd meet people from all over the world who would say, I can't get into Canada. I have an education. I have money. Impossible. And yet, plane loads of Chinese coming over without any issue whatsoever. And I reflect back and I think, I think that that was part of the agenda, was to fill up the country with compliant, obedient immigrants that, you know, when this was rolled out, when this agenda was
Which is
out,
what's happening in Ireland. Ireland as well, for example. I mean,
they're also perpetuating the narrative. Yeah. I even read an article this morning, you know, there's, and I must have been a planted article, but we've lifted the mask mandates in BC. But there's article after article about these people or teachers or parents of students that are so worried about the absence of masks and the effect it's going to have on their children and all of these things. And these articles are pumped every week. You see these coming out through the CBC. And it's so obvious to us, you know, there's no counter to that. But it's always, you know, the narrative.
It's obvious when you're awake, but it's amazing how people who are not awake, how they just read this stuff and they think, well, that's just the story that's in the media and I'm not affected by this stuff at all. You know, I of course, people are. I mean, unless you are holding your newspaper in front of you with a pair of tongs and being slightly disgusted at its contents. If you're reading it just like an ordinary person does, then you're just going to be susceptible to this bullshit.
Yes.
Well, and even if you're reading the international publications, I mean, I read The Economist weekly. Then I discovered it's a Rothschild publication. But I've read The Economist for 35 years. And in a sense, when I reflect back, I think that whole narrative of globalism.
Yeah.
They pitch that almost in every article. And I didn't really pick up on it until I realized it was owned by the Rothschilds. And I reflected back and I thought, oh my goodness, I have been, you know, exposed to this for many years.
And if you look at
The Guardian as well.
And if you look at like The Economist, for example, they promote all kinds of meetings and conferences, and they all relate back to the World Economic Forum narrative.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, digital economy, the future of work, all of these things are constantly being promoted through these conferences. Mm-hmm. And kind of this elite little conference that you'll be invited to and you participate in something, you know, cutting edge. But it's very pervasive.
Oh, and when we lived in Oxford, every lecture I attended, they managed to incorporate the sustainable development.
Of course they did.
From Agenda 30, you know, Agenda 21, yeah. Agenda 30. And, you know, every single discussion seemed to revolve around these, you know, these principles, whether it's Kate Rowling talking, whether it's Jeffrey Sachs, you know, Kate Rowling with her donut economics, Jeffrey Sachs, I think actually is probably an architect of the sustainable development goals. I mean, he's very intertwined in the whole agenda, but these are the people who were, you know, speaking on a regular basis in Oxford, giving lectures at the Oxford Union, or Thomas Piketty, who's a, you know, the French economist, complete socialist.
Yeah.
But they had a huge platform at institutions like Oxford. And I read recently that Oxford might be the breeding ground for the World Economic Forum.
Yeah.
Well, interestingly,
it may have groomed.
Interestingly, when it came to the SDGs, if you wanted funding for your project, I mean, I even encountered this, you know, discussions. Well, if you can tie in three or four of these SDGs into your thesis or your research and frame it under this kind of umbrella, then you have much higher likelihood of getting funding.
Yes.
And I think this is the thing I saw at Oxford, is most of the funding seems to be coming through that vehicle, that the SDGs, or investigating climate change related things, or actually the human caused climate change particularly. So now looking back, I see it much more clearly. When you're in the thick of it, you're just you're a little more oblivious.
Yeah. There's a phrase I coined. I think I coined it, called "They've got the Rolexes, they've got the time," which is to say that the people, whoever they are, I mean, you know, we don't really know at the highest level. But whoever is coordinating what is going on in the world today, it goes at least back to the foundation of the Trilateral Commission by David Rockefeller and Zbigniew Brzezinski in 1971. The World Economic Forum, I think, was formed about that time under a different name. Schwab, I think, was chosen by Henry Kissinger. If you go back to the late 60s, Henry Kissinger was saying, we need some kind of forum to do the things that the World Economic Forum does now. And then, lo, young Klaus Schwab appeared. I think Schwab is himself related to these elites on some level. Mm-hmm. But, and they've infiltrated...
We have a key character as well in Canada, Mark Carney, who was the head of the Bank of England. So when we lived in England, yeah. He was your Bank of England,
yes.
The head of the Bank of England. Prior to that, he was the head of Bank of Canada. But his nickname in Europe is Davos Man.
Yeah.
And now he's back in Canada, behind the scenes, pulling the strings. He is the puppet master. I'm convinced that he, because Trudeau is not bright. I know people that talk with him.
I think I think he's been on the Monarch program. He has this far off look. It looks to me like, hang on, let's get rid of this call. Hello? Hello, I'm doing a podcast, darling. Call me later. Bye. Right.
So we have Mark Carney, who is very powerful, very clever, and very entrenched in the agenda of the World Economic Forum. And he's in Davos every January. And he is pushing that agenda so hard in this country. And I think that Trudeau is merely a puppet, as you were saying.
Yeah.
The two-faced, though.
You know about MK Ultra and its successor, Monarch. So he's not a female pop star. I mean, they're all Monarch control, aren't they? But he has that sort of... There's something very weird about Trudeau. There's something, he's got this sort of 1,000-yard stare. You know who else you gave us, you Canadians, before Trudeau? Maurice Strong. Maurice Strong was the architect of the, it was under the auspices of Maurice Strong that the Rio Earth Summit happened, which was the beginning of this whole, not the beginning, actually it predates that because it, Gro Harlem Brundtland, I think, started it in the 1970s, but Rio 1992 was where it cranked up a gear, didn't it? And suddenly we were on this trajectory towards where we are now. So you've got all these placemen who, as Schwab boasted, have been infiltrated into every government around the world, every academic institution. You mentioned Jeffrey Sachs, Jeffrey Sachs is always being quoted in the media. And looking back, you say to yourself, was it really innocent that he was always being quoted in the media all the time? No, because the media too is part of the problem. But most people cannot make these connections because their heads would explode. They think nobody could create a conspiracy on this level. But it's there, isn't it?
I mean, you look at our finance minister, and she's also the deputy prime minister, Chrystia Freeland.
Yeah.
I mean, she is even on the board of the World Economic Forum. So it's pretty clear to us that this is being fully infiltrated, but people don't make the link, as you suggest.
And in Canada, we have very tight relations as well with China. In fact, there's multiple reports of our military doing winter training with the Chinese.
Yeah, that'll work.
And we seem to have Chinese personnel. We have Chinese leaders heading our universities who have deep connections with labs of, you know. So there's a lot of shady business going on in our world, in our academic world across the country. They have infiltrated the highest levels of corporations. They bought up a good part of Canadian industry. They've moved into politics. They've moved into academia. So we've been infiltrated very extensively in our country.
But I suppose the tiny upside for you is that look where you are. And actually, Martin, you can tell me what are those birds we can hear singing in the background? I love this.
Yeah, I was going to apologize because they're drowning out our conversation. It's a black-headed trogon. is the one that you've been hearing calling most recently. And then we had a rufous-naped wren as well. So there's always some bird calling. And you probably hear the cicadas.
Yeah.
That kind of buzzing that you hear in the background. Well, that's cicada season because the rains are coming. And actually, we had a torrential downpour yesterday, which is very early this year. But there's lots of life, and there's howler monkeys in the trees. We hear them every morning.
And I almost stepped on a snake the other night coming into our room. What kind of snake?
I'm not sure, but it looked venomous for sure. It had that rattlesnake.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it had the triangular head, which is the
yeah. Mm-hmm. So as glorious as it is here, there are insects to consider. I have a spider bite that is quite itchy, but all in all, we're loving it.
Did you see the spider?
But we miss Canada. I mean, we miss Canada terribly. We love Canada, and we'd love to be back there.
I think you asked earlier, you know, we're living in this kind of paradise, and it's true on many fronts. But if you ask anybody, including us, you know, what it's like down here, we have a lot of sadness because we've left Canada where we have our homes. We have both of our parents are still alive. They're in their 80s. And so we can't see them. All my siblings are there, Marianne's as well. So we feel this huge loss, probably daily at some level, that we're not where we really ideally want to be, but we feel out of necessity that we need to be here. And so it's this kind of sweet sorrow. I mean, we take advantage of the beauty around us and the freedoms that we have, but we also think about what we've left behind.
Yes.
And there's a huge community here in Costa Rica and elsewhere of like-minded people who have fled their countries. So there's a lot of Europeans here. They fled France. They fled Germany. They have fled even England.
Yeah.
Here a lot of Canadians as well. And we all have the same story. We have fled our country because we no longer trust our government.
Yeah.
So there is no choice in our mind but to leave. I think the battle, we're battling for our country from here, but we have so much legislation being passed through that are essentially our gag orders, that you're not allowed to criticize the government. There's censorship laws galore that are coming in. And there's a lot of talk of the digital ID, which in essence will, you know, QR code us. And if we're not vaccinated, we will continue to be second-class citizens and may lose access to the internet or our bank accounts, which our government's already shown us that, but losing access to academics, healthcare, you know, so we if we go back into Canada, we're entering into a form of slavery.
Yeah.
And it becomes like a prison. And so in our mind, there is no choice, but if you leave Canada, I feel you have to keep, you know, continue being active to fight for it from outside. And you have safety outside that you can speak your mind. You can write your mind. You can be active on social media without fear of repercussion.
Yeah.
Whereas if we are in Canada, we would perhaps be getting a knock on the door.
Marianne is very active, as you know, so I think in some ways she may have already been flagged. There's some indications that's the case.
Oh, sure.
So it's a concern. It would be a concern going back for a long period of time.
So, Marianne, what are you advising people? Because I know you now have these regular chats with people on the internet and sort of advising them on how to deal with the situation. I mean, is it even possible to escape Canada now, say?
There are ways to get out. So I chat with people about different options that are available to them.
Yeah.
There are cracks right now that still exist that people can get out of the country. But also I speak to people about getting their assets out of the country.
Yeah. How do you do that?
Because it's quite clear to me, you know, it's quite clear to me that the government is going to systematically seize our, you know, seize assets, seize bank accounts, investment accounts, RSP, RIF accounts, pensions. They're talking about rolling out universal basic income in Canada. So I think our pensions will get rolled into that. But as a criteria to be a recipient of universal basic income, I think you will need a certain vaccination status. You'll need to be fully boosted to be eligible. So because of all this fear, I think that people are looking to get their assets out, and that's where I try to help people.
How do you do that?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, there are, that's a bigger conversation, but I think that people need to recognize that the goal in Canada is to strip us of our assets. We will own nothing and be happy.
Yeah.
And you can see evidence that our country is imposing more and more taxes. They're talking about removing the tax on your principal residence, which is sacred in Canada. If you own a home and it appreciates and you sell it, that money goes in your pocket. Yeah. But the government a couple of summers ago introduced the concept that they are going to introduce capital gains on your principal residence gains. That is horrific. And that is a huge violation that would affect most Canadians, because most Canadians don't own their home. So these are the things that the government is toying with. And you just know that they're going to be introducing more and more taxes, wealth taxes, capital gains taxes. They may dissolve the capital gains exemptions. They're talking about this, and they're introducing annual taxes based on the value of your home. They're proposing that right now. CMHC did a assessment on whether or not they should have an annual tax on the value of your home. These are scary things.
That's a huge
these
amount
are,
of money.
That's a huge, and our government, under the guise of needing more money, of course they need more money. They've been printing it fast and furiously and moving it into the pockets of their elite friends.
Yeah.
But now they're coming after the common Canadian, and they've already shut down everyone's business. So that now they're coming after people's assets and trying to block their access to pensions. So it's a very scary time financially in Canada, and people are afraid.
Well, actually, you should elaborate on this, Marianne, but a lot of the conversations she has with people back home that try to get money out of the banks are having a lot of trouble. They're very limited in how much they can take and how often they can take it out.
Well, some of the banks are telling their customers that, you know, the teller will lean forward and whisper and say, "I get in trouble if I give you any money." Now, when these stories start flying around, and other clients have told me that they might have $500,000 in the bank and they want to withdraw $100,000, and the bank says, "Sorry, we don't have it." Or, "Sorry, come back next week and we'll try to get it for you." Or, "Sorry, you're limited to $5,000 a week withdrawal." And you've got a lump sum in the bank that you want to get out and put into hard assets.
Yes.
Which is where everyone should have their money right now. I mean, having your money in a Canadian bank is suicide in my mind, because it's not secure. They may prevent you from withdrawing it, or they may decide to impose legislation that was brought in about 4 years ago called the bail-in legislation, which they're able to convert your deposit into bank shares. Well, if I have a deposit in the bank, I don't want bank shares. I want my money.
Yeah.
So these are the issues that are swimming around people's minds in terms of they want their money out of Canada. They want their money out of Canadian banks. The banks are resisting and saying no. And people are desperately trying to get their money out, get it out of the country and get it into hard assets, physical assets, whether that's gold, physical gold, silver, real estate outside of Canada, and other hard assets. I mean, whether it's tractors, compressors, boats, planes, you want to own tangible, physical, hard assets right now because our money is being
eroded
by these epic inflation. And, you know, so.
And the other thing that's coming down the pipe, too, just announced yesterday, it looks like the Bank of Canada is going to raise interest rates by 0.5%, which is unprecedented in the last 10 years, such a big jump. And that's going to, I mean, they're trying to rein in inflation, of course, but that's going to have serious implications on the whole housing market, which you know has been in a big bubble in the last year.
Yeah.
And 0.5% can make a huge difference for people, especially if they're in a variable rate mortgage or their mortgages are coming up for renewal. And so I think we're already seeing the peak of the housing market, and there's going to be a decline. It's inevitable. And again, people are just not cluing in. They think it's just going to keep going up.
Well, when I speak to my banking friends, they're wringing their hands. They're saying this is going to be the year of the foreclosures. They have intentionally extended credit to Canadians. And so Canadians are very overextended with lines of credit. They have home lines. they have bigger mortgages than they can really afford because the interest rates have been so low.
Yes.
But the banks have done this intentionally. This is no accident. This is very intentional. And now as interest rates move up, they're going to move in like vultures and foreclose on people's real estate, which will cause the real estate market to tumble. It will have a cascade effect. And then
the predators are waiting in the wings. I mean, Marianne, you should tell that story.
I spoke to a realtor in Vancouver who has a friend, and her top client is BlackRock. Realtor friend. The only client that this realtor has is BlackRock, aggressively buying up real estate and driving up the prices on Vancouver Island. And so this is what they're doing. They're actively pushing up the real estate market because our real estate market has been fantastic, extraordinary, not based on Canadians earning or the fact that there's more income in the population. It's like this massive bubble, but I do believe it's being driven by Vanguard, BlackRock,
absolutely,
who are aggressively buying. They'll drive up the prices and then they'll escalate the prices to a point that people cannot afford to own these homes anymore.
Yeah.
And then there'll be a collapse in the real estate market, which I think we're on the edge of. I'm hearing realtors say we're at the peak or we're on the way down now.
Yeah.
And then the market will collapse and these predators like BlackRock and Vanguard will be on a shopping spree, picking up all the prime real estate. So,
all the foreclosures. It's easy pickings, right?
Yeah. It's really, really a horrible thing to witness from the outside. And you just feel like shaking people saying, wake up, do not realize what's happening. So I advise people, get rid of your debt because you're very vulnerable. The banks can call your mortgage in the fine print. They can call your mortgage and within a week or two say, give us the money or we foreclose on you.
Yeah.
And so I think we're on the edge of, we're on the cusp of the precipice in Canada. And I just wish more Canadians would recognize it.
Yes, but I think that it's amazing how even when you show them that World Economic Forum video that I think they've now tried to sort of delete from the internet, you will own nothing and you'll be happy. You present all this evidence and people who are not awake to what's going on will simply go, well, this is just hysterical, right? You know, there's no way that this would be allowed to happen. You're paranoid. But it's happening.
I like the term willful ignorance. It's almost they've made a decision to be ignorant of the facts because it provides a little protective safety bubble in the short term, and they don't want to think about the long term because it challenges their paradigm.
Yeah.
And their safety structures.
And we have family members who are in very powerful positions in high places. And they're complicit in the crime. They're very high up in companies who are partners with the World Economic Forum. Mm. And when we point out to them the fact that they're complicit in this crime, look at the agenda of what your companies or your government body is doing.
Yeah.
They refuse to acknowledge
it. It's the end of the conversation.
It's the end of the conversation. Yeah. They're making very good money. They're in powerful positions. They refuse to look inward at their role in this crime.
Yeah.
And, you know, to us, it's very obvious.
Yeah. And I suppose this is not just a Canadian problem you're describing. I mean, this could happen anywhere, couldn't it? So we saw the first bank bail-ins, I think, in Cyprus, which was a kind of... You just look in the past and you see how they've been conducting these experiments to see what they can get away with. And it turns out you can just nick money you can skim their bank accounts and there's nothing they can do. I mean, I worry, for example, we have this tax shelter called ISAs, where every year you're allowed to put in 20,000 or so in stocks and shares or whatever. And this is protected from the tax man. But it seems to me we live in a world where, given that the courts have been bought up as well, that the courts are no longer dispensing justice, that there seems to be no reason why the governments can't eventually confiscate everything you've got just by fiat.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. We have a similar vehicle here called the TFSA, the tax-free savings account, apparently, outside of government reach, but... Of course, they can, they're always, they're with the institutions, so you're, mm-hmm. So they can easily get in and manipulate or control or tax or something that needs to be done in the best interests of society, yeah. Right?
And all the registered accounts that Canadians have for retirement, their RSPs and their RIFs, I really worry that the government will impose rules, surrounding the digital ID. I think that there'll be a lot of rules for accessing those accounts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've been suggesting that people think seriously about moving those assets out of those accounts, even though it's a tremendous tax hit. But, I guess it's a risk analysis that everyone has to do in terms of how much do you trust your government? And are they going to impose rules that surround your digital identity? Have you made a post on social media that violates the government narrative? Are you associating with the wrong people? Have you not had your latest booster, your vaccine booster? There's so many ways that the government is going to be able to control us and cut us off if we do not comply. Yeah. And this is my fear for Canadians, is that they're extremely vulnerable to these type of controls coming down the pipe. But if you're fully vaccinated and you're buying the narrative, you really are at no risk, but you are becoming a slave. But
we had this conversation this morning. It's like, what point will they wake up and recognize that they're slaves? And I suggested that they won't. I mean, I think they're going to be, sounds negative, but dumbed down, or all the vaccinations just continuing to double down on what they believe. Will they ever be able to wake up? There's probably a very small percentage of people that can actually get beyond the narrative that they bought into, yeah. Which is the sad, I think, inevitability.
Well, and in addition to that, there's studies that have come out recently showing that the vaccine causes cognitive impairment. And I do believe that there is something going on in people's cognitive abilities that does not allow them to think critically in the same way. And it's terrible to say this, but I think the vaccine is affecting people's ability. Mm-hmm.
That wouldn't surprise me. But you know what? I think even without the vaccine, even without the help of the vaccine, people have got that cognitive impairment anyway. Because I'll give you a recent example.
That's right. There's the psychology. Yeah.
I'm even more frightened.
There's psychology of it and the physiology of it. Yeah.
I was astonished what happened in my own country during the 2 years of this so-called pandemic, the way that, for example, people were snitching on neighbors for not observing the ridiculous mandates imposed on them by the government for this thing, which is just like a baddish flu year, and masks which don't work, and vaccines which have terrible side effects, and lockdowns which have never been tried before but were invented by President Xi of Canada, and essentially the rest of the world was gaslit into adopting these methods. So I saw all this, and just when we were starting to emerge from this hell of stupidity, suddenly we get a new invented crisis, Ukraine. And suddenly every other building has got a blue and yellow flag flying outside. And if you go on social media and you talk about war crimes being committed by Zelensky, the sainted Zelensky's Ukrainian army, and particularly the sainted Zelensky's Azov regiment of unrepentant Nazis, you're a Putin apologist, and you're kind of unpatriotic. So I can see where you're coming from. It's like, why should I fight and die for people who've already sold the past? They've already surrendered to the Persians. They don't want, why should I stand at the hot gates and die fighting when everyone else has just given up? I can see that, but at the same time, I can see the counter argument, which is, look, the world is closing. This is a global thing. I mean, nowhere is safe, is it? I mean, even Costa Rica, we can't go on running forever. So how are we going to resist?
Well, and we have a new president here who's just been elected, who clearly is a World Economic Forum puppet. Mm. He's a Harvard grad. He's been with the World Bank for three decades. So we're under no illusion that Costa Rica is a safe haven from the madness.
Yeah.
But it is a country where you can slip through the cracks there's ample food, water, and there's a kindness amongst the people.
They're
like the
people.
Curtain twitching you're describing that you have in the UK, and the curtain twitchers that we have in Canada, who are calling the 1-800 government number to report on their neighbor.
Well, because the government was actually rewarding them with monetary payments if they told on their neighbors.
Yeah, whereas in this country, the psychology of the people and the family cohesiveness doesn't lend itself to this sort of phenomenon of the people turning against one another. And that is a huge cultural difference between Canada and the Costa Ricans, or the Mexicans for that matter. I think if you come to a third world country, they still have the basic goodness of looking out for their neighbor. And they are not legalistic. I mean, Canada, as Jordan Peterson talks about, Canada is the capital of wokeism. And we are, you know, we're nice, but very woke. You can't say anything to anyone. You know, you can't say Merry Christmas to someone in Canada because you might offend them on a religious way. So I found it refreshing to be in the UK where your Christmas cards actually said Merry Christmas. Yeah. In Canada, they're all Happy Holidays.
Right.
And the schools banned the celebration of any Christian holidays. And yet we were able to celebrate every other religion's
Hanukkah,
holidays.
You Ramadan. Know,
it was ridiculous. But so Canada is, I think, exceptional in its wokeism. So it makes it a dangerous place to be living at a time like this.
Yeah, yeah. And I totally agree with you about the Costa Ricans. They are just the loveliest, kindest, most generous people. But of course, they're not very good at standing up to authority. When I was driving around sort of remote villages, and you'd see people wearing masks outdoors because they do what they're told. So that's the downside. But the upside,
they're very compliant. But interestingly, if you speak to them about the truth of what's going on, their eyes are wide open immediately. You do not meet the resistance that in a conversation with a Canadian, they become very obstinate and oppositional. With people here, the minute you start speaking to them about the truth of the dangers of the vaccine, they immediately, they're hungry to know more. And immediately they say, I didn't want to get it. I don't agree with this. And they're also the conversation that I'm having many, many times with the Ticos here. I start talking to them about the vaccine and they say, muerte. So many family members and friends are dead because of it.
Really?
And they're getting very, very afraid here. So I think there's a movement in Costa Rica of fear with the vaccine. And I think they're beginning to oppose it. They trusted the government because it is a socialist government here, but they trusted the government, but now they're seeing death all around them and they're afraid and they're not letting their children have it.
Yes.
So there is a movement underfoot, I think, in this country, which is a good one because people, they're simple in a sense, but they're intuitive and you know, you can't avoid the fact that people are dropping like flies around you, which seems to be the case here.
I think it's quite evident
to them that there's a problem.
You're right about third world countries, that they are just, because they are more chaotic, there's a better chance of slipping through the cracks than in a more regulated system. But also, I think the other option are former communist countries where they have an inbuilt distrust for authority. So I've just been in Bulgaria, and obviously they were sort of Soviet bloc, Comintern for many, many, many years. And the populace there still, they really see the state as a problem to be circumvented, not as their kind of kindly big brother that's going to look after them. And I think Bulgaria is only 30% vaxxed, which I think is massive credit to the Bulgarians. I think those kind of places, probably Romania as well, is probably good. Albania. I mean, Albania was the most extreme communist place in continental Europe. And apparently it's the least, you know, it's the freest at the moment. Well, go figure.
So I think the last battlegrounds could be Eastern Europe, the US and Mexico, and
Maybe Africa.
Africa, because I think the Africans are very awake. They're very resistant and very leery of Bill Gates and company.
It's just a different form of colonialism, really.
Yeah, so I think you're going to see great resistance. And in India, I think you're going to see tremendous resistance. But yeah. I think the Western world has been won, in a sense.
Yes.
Western Europe and North America, Australia, New Zealand, I think they're winning the battle. But I think there are large segments of the world that will resist,
some
I
options,
think.
Yeah.
There's,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we have been prepped for this the sort of pre-brainwashed for this over a period of, since the beginning of the 20th century, at least, I would say. There's a famous essay, I think, is it by H.A.B. Taylor or one of the historians, where he talks about the freedoms that existed for an Englishman before the First World War. And they were extraordinary. You know, I mean, you virtually didn't need a passport. You could just do anything. And slowly since then, we've become more and more regulated. We've got more used to the kind of the creeping tentacles of the state in every aspect of our lives. So this has been a long time coming. So which sort of almost answers the question I keep asking, which is why can't people see what's going on? We're under a spell, aren't we? We've been conditioned all this time.
We're under a spell. And one thing I noticed here in Costa Rica is that it seems to me a lot of elite are gathering here. There's a lot of, gorgeous yachts, and there's gorgeous, private jets. And there's very well-to-do families that seem to be congregating in some of these places that are off the radar a little bit. And I keep asking myself, what do they know that we don't know? Why are they congregating in countries where there's no 5G? For instance, there's no 5G in this country. Why are they all congregating in a place like this? Why are they not back in their home country? And there's an inordinate clustering, I think, of the elite. And on one hand, I hate to see them here. But on the other hand, there is an element of safety.
Yeah.
Because when all hell breaks loose, you want to have them nearby, because they know how to survive.
Well, so you can be their cleaning lady, because you may have to be.
That's right.
Maybe the only option left to you, and you could be the pool guy.
Scrub the
Martin.
Deck on their boat.
Scrub the deck on their yacht.
Or Martin, you could be their personal bird watcher. You could point and say, look, that's a
absolutely
that's a quetzal. That's an agami heron.
Oh, it's that elusive agami heron. I need to find. You're one up on me.
That is so cool, isn't it?
Yagami heron.
Yeah. I don't know how many bird watchers there are watching this, but I've seen a Nagami heron, and Martin.
I have not.
You've been going to Costa Rica for how long? 20 years, and you are a professional.
Yes.
Ornithologist.
Yeah.
Yeah. That pleases me greatly, and of course. You'll never have the experience that we did in Corcovado of seeing the tapir walking across the beach, walking in front of us in broad daylight. That was a
fantastic.
Yeah. Oh, Marion, you've got to tell us the story about the billionaire who rescued some colleague from hospital. You know the one?
Oh yes. So we met a billionaire locally here who invited us on his massive yacht. So when we were spending some time with him, we said, so what about COVID? He's an American. Mm-hmm. And we said, so how are you dealing with COVID? And he says, well, of course I'm taking ivermectin prophylactically, and all my crew is taking ivermectin. You know, there's 15 or 20 crew on the boat, all his family. And this was a year ago. And he said, of course. I said, well, how did you know about ivermectin? I said, this is very interesting to me. And he said, well, my doctor at the very beginning of COVID pulled me aside and said, listen, here's the plan. Take ivermectin prophylactically once a week, and you don't need to worry about COVID. And also do not get the vaccine. We are not getting the vaccine. So he followed that advice. So anyway, he's on his yacht enjoying life, and all of a sudden he hears about his CEO back up in the US who's in hospital with a very serious case
on a ventilator,
And he must not have got the memo on take the ivermectin. So anyway, he jumps in his private jet, flies up to the US, dresses up as a doctor, sneaks in and gives him a dose of ivermectin because it was, you know, one of the hospitals that bans any treatment. Of course, you don't want to treat and get a COVID patient better. So anyway, he gives him a dose of ivermectin. The next morning, dresses up as the physician again, sneaks in, gives him another dose, and his friend, CEO, walked out the door that afternoon, and the staff, the hospital, you know, the doctors and nurses thought they were witnessing a miracle. You know, you don't see people getting off a ventilator. The ventilators, they nickname the death machine. They're meant to kill you. They're not meant to get you better. So the fact that this gentleman got up and walked out was testament to the power. But
also, Marianne,
so when I hear this, I just, it annoys me so much because I think there are two rules. There's the rules for the elite, and they're enjoying themselves. We see them here. They have no masks on. They're having massive parties. They're not worried about COVID at all. And they're all taking ivermectin prophylactically. And none of them are vaccinated. And then there's the commoners who have no access to treatment. And I mean, look at the Queen. They showed a clip of the Queen having ivermectin when she had COVID recently. She had ivermectin available to her on her bedside table to treat COVID. Mm. In Canada, it's like contraband. You're not, a doctor loses his license in Canada if he administers COVID or administers ivermectin or hydroxychloroquine. So there are definitely two rules for the elite and the commoners. To me, that embodied, meeting this gentleman embodied that whole phenomenon that we are the commoners and we're not supposed to know about it.
Yeah, exactly. Because these elites or whatever you want to call them, if they were well-intentioned, they would be blowing the whistle, wouldn't they? They would be saying things like, look, this is what I had to do to get my CEO out of hospital. You know, this would be a story that he'd tell to shame the medical establishment and the political authorities into making ivermectin generally available. But what's he doing instead? He's just doing it under the radar, just looking after his own and not caring about anybody else. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Well, not speaking up. It's so frustrating. It's so frustrating. And we also have another small story to share of a former CEO or president of Bayer Pharmaceuticals. And we met him in Corfu. He's from Tel Aviv. And he and his wife were taking hydroxychloroquine prophylactically. And I said, well, that's very interesting. Hydroxychloroquine in Canada, we're not allowed to use hydroxychloroquine prophylactically or for treatment of COVID. Here is the former president of Bayer Pharmaceutical, he and his wife on vacation in Corfu, happily taking it. They're not going to get the vaccine. And if they do, it will be a saline solution. They know, they get the plot. Yeah. But this, I think the irony here is that we've got these two parallel tiers. We've got these two tiers in society, and sadly, if you're stuck in your country and you're not traveling anymore, you're not bumping into these people, and you're only getting your information from the talking heads on TV.
Yeah.
And you know, but I keep saying to people who are in Canada, get out of the country and start talking to people, because you will meet people like this who share these stories, and you will see firsthand that you are being lied to. But
can you even?
They can't get.
Say you're one of us, and you live in Canada, which means you won't have had the death jab. You can't even get out of Canada if you haven't had the death jab, can you?
You can't get out of Canada. In a lot of positions, you lose your job. I know so many physicians who have lost their license because they refuse to be jabbed, or they are sharing the downside of the vaccine, kind of, you know, doing their due diligence in terms of sharing with their patients the risk, which is something that a doctor typically talks to you about the pros and cons of any treatment. They are not allowed to talk about the cons. So there are many brave warriors in Canada, physicians who have spoken up, but they're now been pulled into massive lawsuits. They've lost their license to practice medicine. They've been suspended by the College of Physicians. There is complete medical tyranny in Canada, and And also, if you're a government employee or working with an umpteen dozen companies, they've suspended you without pay, and you don't have access to any money in terms of severance pay, in terms of employment insurance. They've been cut off. If you're not vaccinated in Canada, you are a second-class citizen.
Yeah.
You have no rights.
Yes, terrible. Well, that, actually, before we go, you must tell me where people can contact you or find you so that they can, because I imagine lots of people are going to be watching this and going, we want Marianne's tips on how to save our asses before it's too late.
Yeah, I'm quite active on Telegram. I used to be on Twitter until I got booted off three times in a row for talking about things like ivermectin or, you know, the sensibility surrounding lockdown madness. But anyway, I'm on Telegram, and I go under the name of Marianne and the Professor. And I have Marianne and the Professor. I have a money channel. I have an original channel where I upload my own videos of interviewing people. And I also post a lot of relevant information. So that's the best place. And the contact information for me is on those channels. There's contact information.
Okay, well, I'll put this below the in the details below the podcast. Mm-hmm. You'll spell Marianne, Mary A double N.
Marianne and the Professor. Yeah.
Okay.
That's my identity on Telegram. But, and I don't know how long Telegram will be available to us, because the Russian owner Durov, I think he is beginning to monitor things a little bit more. You're seeing really key whistleblowers like Edward Dowd, who is a former BlackRock executive. I follow him, but on some devices, I cannot see his posts, depending on what device I'm on. I can't even screenshot his posts. So this is what Telegram is doing now.
It turns black.
And I can't share any of his posts. So they're beginning to censor people on Telegram, which I'm really sorry.
Telegram's a trap.
Yeah. I think Telegram is actually Intel and a fabulous Intel force that the government, you know, because I'm under no illusion that Russia is, they have a different role in all of this in Ukraine. But I do believe that Russia and Ukraine are equally evil, but they have different roles.
They're differently evil. I think you're right.
They're different. They're, you know, but anyway, I do believe that Telegram is a source of tremendous Intel, but they are beginning to cut off people, key people. And in certain countries, they're blocking Telegram.
Out of interest, do you believe that there are any good guys? I mean, any good guys out there who are, you know, in positions of power or with money or whatever, who are batting for us? Or do you think it really is just us against?
I think Bolsonaro probably is in our camp. I look in Canada, one of the key people who is a major worry for us is Brian Peckford, who is the former premier in Newfoundland. He has stepped up and become extremely vocal in Canada. So in Canada, there's not too many.
Well, there's another fellow, Randy Hillier. I'm sure you've heard of him. He was arrested because he spoke at the Freedom Convoy. And
with the truckers.
And so he's arrested on 7 counts of, I don't know, civil disobedience or something.
Yeah.
And he's one of the people from the beginning that has been talking about the narrative and trying to expose what's going on. And the government just goes and arrests him.
And we have a very well-known Pastor Archer, who's been in prison. He just got out after 53 days, and he was treated. I mean, when you hear the story, like the gulag, on a concrete floor without a place to do his business, no blankets, bright lights on 24/7, you know, other prisoners being beaten who say that they, you know, if they talk with him, this is Canada. And it's shocking to hear the stories of how people are being treated when they're put in Canadian prisons right now. It is worse than North Korea.
So,
innocent people, Pastor Archer is just trying to allow Christians to assemble in a church.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to do that in Canada. You know, so there is an attack on the mm-hmm. Christian church. Unfortunately, most Christian churches have been bought and they've turned themselves into vaccine clinics, or their leadership has been paid off. So the vast majority of Canadian churches have been bought, but there are a few that are standing up, but those leaders have been put in prison in Canada.
So
as unbelievable.
As it stands, suppose you haven't had the jab in Canada, and you're not allowed onto aeroplanes, you're not allowed onto boats, you're not allowed onto trains, you're not allowed onto buses. How can you get out? Do you walk across the border? Are there certain safe borders?
Well, I hear stories that people are with a backpack. They're running across the border. There's rumors that people are looking at claiming asylum, political asylum in the U.S., hoping that they can be granted that. There's a lot of ways. We have a long border, so there are quite a few ways to get out.
You know,
if you can get into the U.S., you're home free. So I think that people are resorting to all sorts of methods to sneak out of the country. But is it that dire? This is how dark it is.
Canadians are escaping Canada.
The only way you can get out is by going
across the long border. You can't do it legitimately at all anymore.
No, you cannot do it legitimately unless you get, if you have fake papers. But now it seems as though at some of the airports, they're scanning the people's body. There must be something in this vaccine because I've heard a couple reports that people have been scanned who have fake papers and they can tell they don't have the vaccine in their body. So people, the fake papers are not a good method anymore. That's because our government has threatened that if you get caught with fake papers, a massive fine and 8 years in prison. So people are afraid to go that route. So it's better.
Some people have tried going across the land border into the U.S. and some have been successful. It really depends on, I think, the agent or which state you're going into. And others have tried and get flagged and then they can't enter the U.S. for 5 years. So it's real hit and miss, and it creates an incredible amount of stress and uncertainty. If you are trying to leave, you might get lucky or you might not and then be really stuck.
Presumably there were safer states.
After flag.
Presumably there are some safe states to go into. I mean, I imagine Illinois is not a good state to go into because it's...
That's right. There's probably, my guess is 10 to 20% of Canadian population that want out. They want to escape, but they don't know how.
This is the largest exit of Canadians in the last 40 years, this last quarter, I think, or the last year.
I think it's probably in the history of Canadian history. People are viewing our country as it's in, here in Costa Rica, people say, oh my gosh, you're from Canada. That's the new North Korea. That's how people refer to it outside of the country. But inside Canada, it's very oppressive. It's very dark right now. And there are so many laws coming down the pipe. You really feel as though you're being monitored. In fact, the government confessed a couple of months ago that they were monitoring everyone's cell phone conversation. Well, this is a problem. If you have the government spying on you on your cell phones and they're monitoring, they exposed all the donors to the trucking convoy. They put that out in the public domain and shared people's telephone numbers and addresses and names and how much they donated. That was put out in the public. So if you have some neighbors who are not in the same camp, you feel quite vulnerable in Canada.
Yeah.
You know, you're under persecution.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
Right.
And even now that they dropped the mandates just in the last week for unvaccinated can now go into restaurants again. But I just spoke with a friend yesterday who said a group of them went into a restaurant and half were vaccinated, half were not. And all of a sudden they asked them to show their vaccine passports. And they said, but no. The law has changed. But the government has granted businesses the authority to use their discretion. So this whole dinner party group had to get up and leave because half of the group was not vaccinated. So this nonsense is still going on, even though the government has said, no, we dropped the vaccine passport, but they're encouraging governments to utilize that method.
Yeah.
So it's really ugly. It's really ugly in Canada. I don't recognize the country, and I'm like a fourth or fifth generation Canadian. I adore Canada. And I was always so proud to be a Canadian. I mean, when we travel, I just spoke so highly of our country. I really felt it was one of the best countries in the world. And right now, I feel it might be one of the worst countries in the world to be living in.
Yeah.
It's the most oppressive, I think. And I think because it is so key in this agenda, it's very rich in resources. is very strategically positioned in terms of the, you know, Asia and the US, that I think it is one of the top tier countries that the globalists are going after to control.
Right.
And I think that's why it is so draconian in Canada right now. They are determined to get control of us. And so far, so good.
Yeah.
Well, Marianne and Martin, thank you. Thank you for really depressing us and making us envious at the same time with your bird song. And I almost can't bear to talk to you on video calls, because I know that I'm going to hear all those birds, and I know I love Costa Rica. What an amazing.
And there is a wonderful community of like-minded people here from all over the world. So it's quite magical to be in a place where you feel that you have freedom. There is a lightness here that when people exit Canada and they arrive here freshly, it's almost like they need to go into it's like rehab.
Yeah.
You know, because I don't think you realize how oppressive it is until you get out. And you realize how much, you know, how the stress has affected you. Yeah. So when we speak to new escapees, they almost look like they're shell-shocked, like they've just got out of prison.
Yeah.
But it doesn't take them long here, because you're in at one with nature, and it's beautiful here.
Yeah.
It really is.
Well, well done. Well done for escaping. And thank you for being on the Delling Pod. I think you've been absolutely great.
And we look forward to having you back.
Yeah, we look forward to seeing you again.
I'd be there like a shot. thank you, everyone, for listening and for watching this. Pursuant to the theme of this podcast, I too am being increasingly censored and being given a really hard time. I've just had an event that I was planning in London at this big venue. They cancelled on me. They cancelled on me we told them who I was going to be doing a podcast. I was going to do a podcast live with this person, and with Majid Nawaz. And we told them this, and that they said fine. And then today I heard that no, we've decided that we're just going to cancel, just like that. So all these institutions are making it hard for people like me to earn a living. So they don't want us to speak out. I wasn't going to put on a swastika armband and goose step up and down the stage. I was just going to talk to Majid about things like COVID, the vaccines, legitimate topics, I think, Ukraine. Mm-hmm. We should be free to talk about these things, shouldn't we? But increasingly, and this ought to be a message for people who think that people like us are overstating it. We're not overstating it. And we are just the canaries in the coal mine. And soon they're going to shoot the canary in the coal mine. So that there are no more people able to warn you anymore, and you're all going to become slaves. So while you still can, support people like me. You can support me on Locals, on Subscribestar, on Patreon, and on Substack. Please, help me, because otherwise I'm not going to be able to do this stuff anymore. So thank you for listening, and plan your finances. Look at Marianne's videos. Thanks, Marianne and Martin. It's been great talking to you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you so much, James, for having us.